Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike down here in Arizona land. Your mind is your primary weapon. Today's date is the 7th of May, 2018, and it's a Monday. You're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. It's about 5 minutes or so after 8 a.m. Arizona time. Today, we'll get to the second half of our insurgency introduction, give you a little bit of a bibliography and resources, or collected some of the information. The phone lines are open. The telephone is 712-432-0900. The access code is 957-464, and the pound sign. And then to unmute your phone is *6. My email address is altabeeb762@hotmail.com. Seems to be rather difficult for, and that's why I spell it phonetically. And so those first two words is altabeeb762@hotmail.com. So that would be Alpha, Lima, Tango, Hotel, Alpha, Bravo, Echo, Bravo, 762@hotmail.com. Dear, where are we at? Bob Miner, a real quick one on this. If you'd like to call Bob and leave a message, words of encouragement, telephone is 701-251-2365. Message comes on, ask if you'd like to speak to him or purchase a phone card. And then it asks for you to enter in the first three letters of the last name, M-I-N, and that translates out to 646, and you'll have about 10 seconds or so to say, you know, hi, Bob, we're thinking of you, hang in there, etc. His mailing address is Robert Miner, and that's M-I-N-E-R, SCCC 205 6th Street Southeast, Suite 201, Jamestown, North Dakota, 58401. Robert Miner, SCCC 205 6th Street Southeast, Suite 201, Jamestown, North Dakota, 58401. And he is getting mail and he is getting the telephone messages. And he wants to say thank you for your continued support. The touched on this a week or so ago about our upcoming lesson. Did a lot of research here into some of the newer concepts, tactics, techniques, and procedures on unconventional warfare, insurgency, and the lesson has at least two, if not multiple, reasons on why it's being presented that obviously it does fit in with our understanding of insurgency. And it's the current thinking of what the United States government, how they're harnessing all the power politically, working through the politicians, the State Department, the military, etc., monetarily, intelligence collection, on how they're trying to defeat insurgents. And also the second aspect of it is it, quite a bit of information that should clearly be implemented and instituted in your training of what all the parts and pieces of that need to be, because training is a little bit more than driving out to your training site, putting your gear on and shooting some holes in pieces of paper. And if you're not instituting training, leadership, planning, intelligence, preparation of the battlefield, field sanitation, organization, communications, medical, and a whole pile of other things, then your training is not very effective. I also mentioned last week about a book I came across called The Road Not Taken by Max Boot, Edward Lansdale in the American Tragedy in Vietnam. And it kind of goes into the point of about, well, maybe if we'd have listened to Edward Lansdale, things would have turned out quite differently. I poked around on the internet the other day, and I found some places where the book's for sale. They have hardbound and paperback. Now, it was kind of odd. The hardbound copy was, I think, like $20-$22. And then it said that the paperback was like $30-some. And I'm like, wow, that doesn't make sense. And then there was some special edition or something like that, and it was closer to $80, but there was only one available. And I'm not sure if I was just not looking at it right or how that was. But my point is, it's that there's a lot of information out there on how insurgency is waged from a historical perspective. And this book, The Road Not Taken, goes into quite a bit in-depth information on insurgency, or what's sometimes termed as counterinsurgency. And I state that you have to know both methods to be able to have a better understanding. It'd be clearly to point out that the people that want to come down to the border, that they would be operating in a counterinsurgency mindset and methodology. And so it would behoove you to understand how all these aspects. Now, of course, it's Max Boot in his book, The Road Not Taken, about Edward Lansdale. And I've noticed through the years that, and it's similar, the methodology of about Thomas Edward Lawrence, known to the world as Lawrence of Arabia, because I'm not trying to necessarily compare the two per se, because Lawrence was an insurgent and Edward Lansdale was a counterinsurgent. So they're two opposite sides. But the whole part of it is the comparison that I'm making is that they were both way ahead of their time and so misunderstood by the powers that be that it was very difficult for them to get their concepts across. What happened over in the Middle East 100 years ago is quite a bit of difference from what happened in Southeast Asia 50 years ago. So, you can read Seven Pillars of Wisdom or The Revolt in the Desert by Lawrence, and as you go through that, it talks about gaining the support of the villagers and the chieftains and the tribes, and how then they moved forward in their operations against the Turks. And then you cross-compare that with Edward Lansdale and how he got support of the people and the politicians, and sometimes, especially in Vietnam, where after the assassination of Diem, how it was coup after coup after coup, and somebody would take over, and then it turned into, there was a breakdown of communications where the minister of economics wouldn't talk to this guy and something else, and the president wasn't talking to the vice president, and the paranoia that was all going on at that time, that everybody was expecting the next coup right around the corner, and such a big mess that it occurred, and instead of trying to unite the country and showing the people that you cared for them, it was more or less just paranoia ran wild. And as a Lansdale, he had first got to Vietnam in the early 1950s and made numerous trips there. And because of his track record in his help of getting Ramon Magsaysay elected in the Philippines, that he is clearly working with Diem and trying to get in Vietnam and getting him to realize the position and the responsibility he had to the people. And then how things got pushed out of control, and the State Department and the military and everything. And he was quite prescient in saying about these things that occurred and these other things were ignored of what was going to happen. Time and time again, he was way ahead making memos, and not just something on some little scrap piece of paper. We're talking some of these things that were quite extensive, some, you know, 5-10 pages, some 50 pages, 60 pages long, single space typed out of exactly what was going to happen if these methodologies weren't followed. And of course, there were the people that were working behind the scenes in the State Department and MACV that, even though they would give Lansdale lip service and that aspect of it. So once again, the point is of you have $20 and you can spend it on a lot of worthless patches to put up and down your sleeve that really mean nothing. Or you can spend that same $20 and get this book called The Road Not Taken by Max Boot. And instead of wasting your time watching mindless YouTube videos, if you'd actually take the time to read the book, then you would gain a better understanding and you would be more prepared to either wage an insurgency or battle the insurgents. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. I would like to say thanks for taking the time to listen in to Your Mind Is Your Primary Weapon, and you're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio, and thank you for helping keep the network on the air. As usual, our broadcast today is dedicated to Lily Grace Antoinette, and I have a pretty extensive list of, we'll call it homework. Now, quite a few of these publications are available on the internet for free in PDF and Adobe files. So, and I would also recommend that instead of just loading them onto a flash drive or onto your computer and viewing them that way because of the possibility, eventuality of an EMP or a breakdown in the electric grid, et cetera, that it would behoove you to acquire hard copies of these publications. And you get a 3-ring binder, and if you're going to take the time to print them off, I would also suggest that you get some of those document protectors, the vinyl pages that put it in. So, and that helps on the binding, so you know you're not punching holes in the side of the paper that get torn out from changing the pages. And I'll admit some of them are several hundred pages long, but if you take your time and you know print up 10 pages of a certain publication and take the time to get the vinyl pages that aren't very expensive, you get them for about a half a cent a piece, and go ahead and print them up and do about 10 pages at a time. Don't try to print the whole thing up and then sit down and try to read it all, because a tendency in the mind is to remember what you read at the beginning and you remember what you read at the end, and you kind of forget about what happened in the middle. So it just like a book or any other type of read, that it's better to take it in small 5-10 page increments and work at that. And then if something happens, then you'll still have this hard copy of this information available to you. And it's kind of also where we've been. Like I say, we're only on Liberty Tree Radio for 1 hour on Mondays. And also then we switch over on Thursdays and Fridays to the micro effect, starting at the same time but going for 2 hours each day. And so the limited amount of time that we have here on Liberty Tree Radio. And the main thrust of what I'm trying to present is a historical perspective of insurgency and what the government security forces have attempted to do over the last 100 years or so on how to fight the insurgents. But then again, there's times that we've gone back to historical perspectives of about Alexander the Great in Afghanistan, and that was 2,500 years ago. So this history of insurgency and quote-unquote counterinsurgency is not a new phenomenon, and that's kind of where it's been. And there were a couple of times that I've, because of the historical dates of things that the archives that have been released, that we've pointed some of this information out. So that's kind of where we're coming from. So I hope that you have a paper and pencil now, because now you're going to get your homework assignment, and your mind is your primary weapon. And it's kind of the question, because can guerrilla tactics be employed successfully against guerrillas? And the answer is negative. And to suppose otherwise is to fall into the methods fallacy. Indian fighters do not become Indians by taking scalps. And a spotted jungle suit does not make a United States Marine a guerrilla. And obviously, because of the experience of World War II and of every conflict since then, has made it clear that commando troops are not guerrillas, nor can the so-called counterinsurgency forces being developed in a more sophisticated school be considered guerrillas. And even though they may employ some of the more obvious techniques of the guerrilla fighter, the night raid, the ambush, the roving patrol far from the military base, and so on. And those techniques are as old as warfare itself. And obviously it's possible to conceive of the use by the Cro-Magnon man against the last of the Neanderthals. And they were employed by the Aboriginal Britons against Caesar's legionnaires, and they're the techniques of savages in the Colombian jungle, and no doubt a few surviving New Guinean headhunters. But headhunters are not guerrillas, and the distinction is simple enough, because when we speak of the guerrilla fighter, we are speaking of the political partisan, an armed civilian whose principal weapon is not his rifle or his machete, but his relationship to the community, the nation in and for which he fights. And that's why I tell you that your mind is your primary weapon, and all the parts that go into understanding. So number one on my recommended reading list is called The Art of Insurgency by Donald W. Hamilton. The Art of Insurgency. It's mainly a study of the Vietnam War, but it touches on some other aspects of it. The Art of Insurgency by Donald W. Hamilton. The next one is FM 31-20-3, and it's called Foreign Internal Defense Tactics, Techniques, and Procedures for Special Forces, FM 31-20-3, Foreign Internal Defense Tactics, Techniques, and Procedures for Special Forces. Another one is called About Face by Colonel David Hackworth. About Face, Colonel David Hackworth. The next one is The Summary of the Principles of the Art of War by Anton Henry de Jomini, and that's J-O-M-I-N-I. The Summary of the Principles of the Art of War. The next one is Limited War by Robert E. Osgood, O-S-G-O-O-D. Limited War, Robert E. Osgood. Next one is War of the Flea, A Study of Guerrilla Warfare, Theory and Practice, Robert Tabor. War of the Flea, A Study of Guerrilla Warfare, Theory and Practice, Robert Tabor, T-A-B-E-R. Next one is In the Midst of Wars, An American's Mission to Southeast Asia by Edward Lansdale, L-A-N-S-D-A-L-E. In the Midst of Wars, and that's M-I-D-S-T, In the Midst of Wars, An American's Mission to Southeast Asia by Edward Lansdale. The next one is Sir Robert Thompson, and he has multiple writings, and I think at least one or two books of about insurgency war. Had quite a bit of experience in Malaya and in Vietnam. The next one is a fairly new book called All In by General David Petraeus. The last name is spelled P-E-T-R-A-E-U-S. All In, General David Petraeus. The next one is My Share of the Task, General Stanley McChrystal. The next one is Guerrilla Warfare by Mao Zedong. Guerrilla Warfare, Mao Zedong. The next one is a newer FM. It's FM 3-24.2, and Tactics and Counterinsurgency. Now, there certainly is seems to be a lot of questions about it, because the first one was just called Counterinsurgency, and then when it, within a few years they got a lot of people together and had them write up different chapters of that, and then came out with the new one called Tactics and Counterinsurgency. And there certainly seems to be parts and pieces of it that I can't really say that aren't true, but sometimes it kind of misses the mark. But it's, again, it's back to some of that current thinking on how to wage an effective battle against insurgents. The next one is called Modern Warfare by Roger Trinquier, T-R-I-N-Q-U-I-E-R. Modern Warfare by Roger Trinquier. He was a French officer and had a lot to do with Vietnam, or French Indochina, and Algeria, and some of the tactics that they had attempted to use. It's a historical understanding of the mindset at that time. The next one is called Seven Pillars of Wisdom by T.E. Lawrence, Thomas Edward Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia. And then there's a similar book. The Seven Pillars of Wisdom is about 400,000 words, and Revolt in the Desert is 300,000 words. So it's basically the same thing. We might call it a Reader's Digest condensed version. Seven Pillars of Wisdom. The other one is Revolt in the Desert. Captain P.E. Lawrence, Thomas Edward Lawrence. The next one is The Ugly American, William J. Lederer, L-E-D-E-R-E-R, and Eugene Burdick, B-U-R-D-I-C-K. The Ugly American, William J. Lederer and Eugene Burdick. The one of the characters in the book, I think it's Colonel Hillendale, is crafted directly off of Edward Lansdale. And it kind of explains that the old, you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar. And the people, the leaders of a country, have to have the support of the population in order for them to defeat the insurgents. And there are certain ways that you can treat people as equals and as human beings and get them to work with you and work with each other is to be able to defeat the insurgents. The next one is called Victory at Any Cost by Cecil B. Curry, C-U-R-R-Y, Victory at Any Cost. And Mr. Curry went over and interviewed General Giap in Vietnam quite extensively and kept the notes of the interviews and listened to what General Giap was talking about on their mindset of battling the French and the Americans and the Cambodians and the Chinese and how they were able to come out victorious. And then he'd come back here in the United States and tried to compile all the information. And usually when those things happen, then it leads to a whole nother list of more information. And then he wanted to go back and interview General Giap again for follow-up information, and something happened and broke down in the North Vietnamese government and that stuff. So, but it is quite interesting to hear the leader, their Secretary of Defense, their Minister of Defense, or the general tactician, strategist, whatever you'd like to call General Giap. I got the music coming in here. We can either work together or we can hang separately. You can join together with the band. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Come on, 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 come on
Well, here we are, ladies and gentlemen. It's Mike down here in Arizona land. Your mind is your primary weapon. Today's date is the 7th of May, 2018. That reminds me of that book, The 8 Days in May. But anyway, today's the day before the 8th, so it must make it the 7th of May, 2018. It's a Monday. The first 30-minute block of instruction today gave out the call-in number, which is 712-432-0900. The room number is 957-464 and the pound sign, 712-432-0900, 957-464, and then the pound sign, and then *6 to unmute your telephone. And also that information is at the Liberty Tree Radio. I think it's libertytreeradio.4mg.com. My email address is altabib762@hotmail.com. Alpha Lima Tango Hotel Alpha Bravo Echo Bravo 762@hotmail.com. That also gave out Bob Miner's contact information. Touched briefly about our upcoming lesson here on unconventional warfare and the importance of seeing the evolving tactics and strategy that are used against insurgents, and also as a training guide for you to better to train yourself and your group of people. Spent a little bit of time discussing the book, The Road Not Taken by Max Boot, on how it would be much more beneficial to take the $20 and purchase the book instead of buying $20 worth of worthless patches to put on your uniform. Because in the end, the patches really are worthless, and what's in your mind and a better understanding of insurgency would most likely benefit you a lot more. And to take the time to actually read it instead of watching mindless YouTube videos all day. I'm not saying that there aren't worthwhile videos on YouTube, but you know what happens? You sit down to watch one, and then it gives you a list of other similar recommended ones, and pretty soon you look at the clock, and 4 hours have gone by, and you have nothing to show for it. Thanks for taking the time to tune in today. You're listening to Liberty Tree Radio, sending this one out to Lily Grace Antoinette. And we also discussed a little bit about where we've been. So that's kind of the wrap-up of what's going on. So I see we've got about 19 minutes left on today's broadcast. So is there anybody out there that would like to say something? If you do, then you can call 712-432-0900, and the room number is 957-464 and the pound sign, and then *6 to unmute your phone. And I understand that all these 20, 30 years that the shortwave and the internet broadcast for the alternative media has been going on, and there's been a lot of people in that say, well, this is what you need to do, and this is how it's done, and everything like that. And then somebody comes along and says, yeah, your mind's your primary weapon, and you might want to rethink this. And it's the old doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Because I'm sure of what happened up there at the Bundy Ranch and the follow-up up there at Oregon, nowhere in their planning had anything to do with everybody getting arrested or killed. And that's not very conducive. It's kind of along the lines of they got the cart before the horse. because in an insurgency, the strategic terrain is the people, because that's what your goal is to get the people behind the movement. And when you get out ahead of it and start trying to wage an insurgency, whether it's against the BLM or the overreach of the federal government, and then try to get the support of the people, and now you're competing with the hostile media and the propaganda from the government, then it makes for a very difficult recruitment of your primary goal, which is to get the mass of the people behind you to make the changes. So if anybody has anything to say, 712-432-0900, and the room number is 957-464 and the pound sign. So, and I'm not going there. Never mind. I'm just not going there. We're discussing some bibliography and resources that I would recommend that I've gone through these publications, some of them numerous times. And the next one on our list is called Fiasco, F-I-A-S-C-O, by Thomas E. Ricks. That's a pretty large book, must be 600-700 pages long, but real key information is in the first two or three chapters. He had gone over and interviewed General Tommy Franks before the invasion of Iraq, and then the development of the insurgency in Iraq. And he's fairly fair on his reporting. There's a little tinges here or there of his leftist mindset, but generally I'd say that he does a fairly good job of just presenting the information and not getting too political about those aspects of the next one. And there seems to be some controversy about this also. It's called Counterinsurgency Warfare, Theory and Practice by David Galula, G-A-L-U-L-A. Counterinsurgency Warfare, Theory and Practice, David Galula. He was also in the French. And sometimes the French would get frustrated and get a little heavy-handed. But some of the thought processes and the tactics and the techniques and the procedures that were utilized by the French in Algeria and French Indochina are practical today. But obviously the detractors go, well, how'd that turn out for the French in Algeria and French Indochina? Well, but sometimes when the frustration comes along and then the troops get frustrated, and instead of treating the people fairly, instead of going and stealing their chickens and their pigs and their rice, if you pay for them, like Mao said, then, or go help them harvest their crops, instead of getting into this us against them mindset and treating the peasants poorly, you'll get a lot better, more mileage out of that. The next one is called Learning to Eat Soup with a Knife, Counterinsurgency Lessons from Malaya and Vietnam. Learning to Eat Soup with a Knife by Lieutenant Colonel John Nagel, N-A-G-L. Learning to Eat Soup with a Knife. Basically, this book is on the premise of about the difference in what the British had done in Malaya and what the United States had done in Vietnam, because the British had a very much smaller force in Malaya and really didn't have a whole lot of printed information on how this is how it's done, and then compares that with the large quantity of troops and written material for the troops of the United States operating in Vietnam, on how the British were much easy to adapt and change, as to where when they tried something and it didn't work, then because they had a smaller force and very little printed material on how these things are done, they were much quicker to adapt to wage a successful battle against the insurgents in Malaya, and then the cross comparison to the large quantity of Americans and the large quantity of printed material. That's that on my recommended reading list, and that's enough to get you started. There's quite a few others that not on the list, like The Road Not Taken, and that's a fairly new book. It's only been published here in 2018, and so I would highly recommend that, to add that to the reading list. And so then we come to the point of about the upcoming lesson. And, you know, I don't know if it's nobody's calling because of their particular mindset on, well, you know, maybe if we just ignore him, then maybe he'll go away. And that may be true. But when you lapse into that mindset, then you're not really hurting me. You're only hurting yourself. But that's the way that we've always done it, Mike. Well, sometimes we need to conduct a proper after-action review and come to the realization that some of these things that we're doing wrong, you have to, it's kind of like being an alcoholic. You're going to have to admit to yourself that you're an alcoholic. You can't help to have everybody else telling you that you are, because you don't want to believe it. You're the one that's going to have to come to the realization. And you're going to have to come to the realization that your mind is your primary weapon and not your guns or anything else, and how many X's that you can hit at the bullseye from 14,000 miles away or anything like that. Because most of the time that you're going to be using your firearms, maybe 3% of the time, or even just for the sake of discussion, maybe 5 or 10% of the time. So what's the other 90% of your time going to involve? And that's merely surviving. And that's where organization, security, communications, the medical, the intelligence preparation of the battlefield, the planning, the leadership, the training, the education, the strategy, the tactics, all comes in. And so why is it that the training usually consists of going to the range of 90% of the training and very little other training, and it's almost inversely proportionate, the percentage of is only going to be, you're going to only be using your firearm about 3% of the time, but why does it seem to be it's 90% of your training? And a lot of expenditure. I notice that sometimes that have these discussions with the people on how to be, where they're going to put their money. And I say, well, you know, most likely you'd spend about $2,000 on all your stuff. And right away they want to argue, I wish I had $2,000. And then I go, well, you know, your rifle cost this much, didn't it? Oh, yeah, $800, $900. And then how many magazines do you have? And how much ammunition do you have? So now we're all the way up to at least $1,000, plus a case and a holster and a pistol and pouches for magazines and all that aspect of it. And then they've got to have the latest and greatest uniform, whichever happens to be the multicam or the Desert Digital or that part of it. And then all of a sudden, then they want to buy all these other attachments, telescopes and laser range finders and flashlights, and mine's got more lumens than yours does and all that. But then they want to cut corners on, oh, I found these $5 Vietnam surplus boots at the surplus sale, or over here at the gun show, or the fill in the blank. And so they're going to spend $1,000 on a rifle, but they're going to spend $5 on some boots that are, what, 50 years old? They've been sitting in some warehouse, so they're most likely going to fall apart within the first couple of weeks that you put them under heavier use. And then what are you going to do? Cut the soles off of them and tie some rubber around them and call them Ho Chi Minh sandals or something. I don't know what that story is all about. And then they cut corners. Oh, we don't need to do all that field sanitation stuff. Well, water is more important than your firearm. Good, clean food is more important than your firearm, because you could spend all the money on your firearm, but if you have poor drinking water, you're going to be extremely sick, and you're going to be miles and miles away from any place where you can engage the enemy if you don't die from dehydration, bad food, bad field sanitation by not being able to dispose of your camp waste. People are going to be camped out, and they're going to walk across some dirt road and go relieve themselves. And then those flies that are going to be attracted to that human waste is going to fly across the street and then land on your food, and then you're going to be eating that, and by nightfall, you're going to be extremely sick if you don't die. So there certainly are a lot of basic things that seem to be constantly overlooked. And also with this concept of about the unconventional warfare, and the current mindset and the evolution of the United States government viewing and training and organizing and planning on how to wage a successful battle against insurgents, and also by reverse engineering, if you will, of reading between the lines of what needs to be done, and then we can utilize this information to help better your training schedule. And that's kind of another aspect of it, that oftentimes when you get back from training, you schluck your gear in the corner, and then the night before you're like, oh, I've got to fill my canteens, and oh, I've got to check this, and oh, I've got to check that. And the person that's in charge of training, they go, man, we got to get training next tomorrow. And they try to cobble something together, whereas as your training should schedule, should extend at least a year and a half out, a part of it is what's referred to as train to sustain. So periodically through that year and a half projected forward, that we'll train some of the subjects, like we'll have a review of map and compass, or a review of tracking, or a review of the medical. And then in the meantime, then we'll be incorporating other aspects of all the parts and pieces that are needed to be able to conduct proper training. And the developing the lesson plans. And again, I stress the importance of having a binder. You can go down to the dollar store and get a calendar that usually has a year and a half out published. And you can go through that, and in the squares you can add in what the training is and the ideas of what needs to be implemented into your training. And then instead of having one person conduct and make up the training, you may have on one of your training days that everybody gets together at somebody's house or at a park or at a restaurant. And then ahead of time, you've notified the people of what they would be interested in, whether it has to do with radio communications, field sanitation, financing, planning, you name it, on how it's conducted, an after-action review on how it's properly conducted. It's not a critique or a criticism. It's a professional discussion of what's been going on and an honest assessment of where we want to get to and what do we need to address to make sure that we get to where we want to go. And those aspects of it. And so we sprinkle those throughout the next year and a half. And then that calendar can fit into your three-ring binder, and then you can develop the lesson plans for month to month and lesson by lesson. And the thing is, instead of trying to reinvent the wheel over and over again of what we want to do, then we have a printed copy. So if we want to train to sustain that somewhere we had our original lesson on map and compass, and now a year later that we haven't been doing that lately because everybody wants to use their GPS or something like that. And then instead of having to go back from scratch and developing a training lesson plan on the map and compass, and then you can just refer to the previous lesson plan that's already been developed. And then, of course, down at the bottom of it, that there's a couple of boxes of about what resources that you need to have and the things that during the training that, well, it would have been better if we had this or that. Well, I hear the music coming in here. Your mind is your primary weapon. Next week, we'll get back to our study of insurgency. And I thank you for being with us again today. You guys take care of yourself, and I'll see you on Thursday over on the Micro Effect. Thank you. Now I'm expecting all hell to break loose. People are crazy and times are strange. Locked in tight, I'm out of range.